Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Kalmbach Feeds. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program, and editor-in-chief of Chicken Whisperer magazine. Each week, I welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and, of course, living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit us online at chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter, become a fan on Facebook, and subscribe to the totally free digital edition of Chicken Whisperer magazine. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Kalmbach Feeds.
At Kalmbach Feeds, our layer pellets and crumbles are all natural, antibiotic-free, with no animal byproducts. Formulated just for laying hens, our feed is fortified with essential amino acids and calcium to ensure maximum production of nutritious, tasty, strong-shelled eggs. From our family to yours, feed your hens the way nature intended. Pure, wholesome goodness. Kalmbach Feeds. Find a dealer at kalmbachfeeds.com. That's K-A-L-M-B-A-C-H feeds.com. Or order your layer pellets and crumbles today on amazon.com. Kalmbach Feeds is a proud sponsor of the Chicken Whisperer.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com. Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer. If you're in the market for a new incubator, then look no further than GQF. They have a great selection of tabletop and cabinet-style incubators at prices you can afford. I love my GQF Genesis Model 1588. It has a large picture window and an automatic thermostat, which makes for a better hatch every time. Go pick out your new incubator at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com. The Yardbird Chicken Plucker takes the hassle out of backyard chicken processing by fully defeathering birds in less than 15 seconds. The compact size makes it easy to transport and easy to store. The 1.5 horsepower motor and 20-inch stainless steel tub can handle 2 8-pound birds at the same time. There are no belts or pulleys to wear out and no adjustments necessary, which makes it virtually maintenance-free. For more information about how you can own this must-have chicken processing product, visit YardbirdChickenPluckers.com today. That's YardbirdChickenPluckers.com. Want to protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster? Nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver hen aprons come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and large fowl hens. They also come in several different styles and colors. Give your hens the protection they deserve by purchasing Hen Saver hen aprons today. 100% of all proceeds goes to provide care to rescued animals at Crazy K Farm in Hempstead, Texas. Purchase your Hen Saver hen aprons at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
This looks like a job for
Super Chicken.
You get the super sauce. I'll don my super suit.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Kalmbach Feeds. We have a great show lined up for you today. We have Dr. Petescu, who's going to be teaching us all about heat stress and chickens. It's that time of year. I know we've been dealing with a lot of heat around the country over the last several weeks. Of course, it is summer, and we're going to be talking about the effects of your poultry, kind of maybe ways to keep them comfortable, maybe not cool, but keep them comfortable during the summer months. I've said a million times, if I've said it once, that heat is far more detrimental to your chickens than the cold ever will be. And it's interesting, as and I think I put this in a article in my magazine at one point, I said it's interesting to notice over the years how, as humans, we feel like or a lot of them, a lot of chicken keepers, feel like they have to keep their poultry, their backyard flock, warm and toasty in the wintertime. But they almost, it never really crosses their mind about the summertime. For example, they'll move for, from my observation, they don't even think twice about heating the coop in the winter. Oh, yeah, I got to put a heat in there. Get toasty warm, nice and happy. But yet, they putting an air conditioner in the coop in the summertime may not even ever cross their mind. So it's interesting, human nature, how the backyard hobbyists, for some reason, think, I got to keep them warm in the, especially new chicken keepers, they'll think, winter's coming, it's going to get cold, I need to keep them warm and toasty and happy because they're my pets and this. But once summer gets here and it's hot and it's humid and it's just miserable, and they for some reason, and I actually got in a conversation years ago with a young lady, and talking about putting a heat in her coop, and you know, because she wants her birds to be happy and comfortable and that type of thing. And I challenged her and basically on a post that said, well, do you have an air conditioner in your coop? And I think her response was something, well, no, now you're just being silly. I'm like, you know, I could almost justify having an air conditioner in the coop a lot more than I could having a heater in the coop. And she thought I was pulling her leg or yanking her chain or something, but I was like, you know, I went through the heat is far more detrimental than the cold ever will be, that type of thing and whatnot. So she thought I was joking with her, but, you know, when I was writing this recent article, it made me think. I was like, it's interesting human nature, us as humans, will for some reason panic or think about putting a heater in the coop in the winter, but it never really dawns us to put an air conditioner coop in the summertime. I could almost, you know, if I saw somebody that says, hey, I just got a window unit, and I kind of installed it in my coop, hooked it up to power so they've got some cool air in the coop. You know, I could probably even just read that, glance on by, and say, yeah, I could probably justify that. You know, heat is far more detrimental versus the heater in the coop and the fire risk for that we see every year for those and things like that. So it's very interesting how human nature runs with that. You know, y'all see it too when you're on the blogs and forums. I don't know if I've ever seen anybody say something like, it's going to get hot this summer where I live. Do I need to put an air conditioner in the coop? So anyway, but it is very detrimental to the chickens. There's many ways we talk about doing this in the past. Providing fresh, cool water for your chickens during the day. And if you work 9 to 5, that sometimes may be hard to do. So we talk about tricks of the trade, like if you have the 3 or 5 gallon watering font, you know, freezing those 20 ounce bottles of water and then dropping two or three in there, keeping that water cool for them. Once that water gets warm, they'll drink less of it. And then once that water approaches their body temperature, they may not drink any of it. And we don't want that. We want them to stay hydrated and drink that water during the day. We also know in the summer that they will drink more and eat less. So we've often talked on the show with experts, okay, if they're eating more or drinking more and eating less in the summer, eating less, are they not getting the nutrients they need for proper egg production and just good overall health for the birds? Because they're eating less, and that's where they're getting the bulk of their nutrition and what they need for a healthy life. So do we need to add maybe some supplements in the water during the summertime? Because, again, we know they're not eating as much, but they're drinking more. Maybe they need to get more nutrients from the water by doing some additives since they're not eating. So all this kind of should be in your thinking process if you have backyard chickens. And if not, well, then we'll hear a lot in just a minute from Dr. Pateski about that. In fact, let's go ahead and bring him on now. And we'll get on with the educational part of this radio show for those of you who are just tuning in. Dr. Pateski, thank you very much for joining us today.
Great. Thanks, Andy. It's good to be here again.
Great. Absolutely. So timely topic, heat stress and chickens. And I'm going to turn it over to you. Hopefully our Chicken Whisperer listeners have that pen and paper out to take some notes on this, and maybe they can implement some suggestions you have and maybe just kind of enter their thought process. Because like I said earlier, it just always seems, oh, it's wintertime, heat in a coop. But summertime, you'd never hardly, I don't think I've ever seen anybody say, oh, I got to put an air conditioner coop, it's going to get hot this summer. And then when you question that, like I said earlier in that story, they look at you like you're being sarcasm or a smart aleck, when I could probably even justify that even more than a heater. So it's interesting. But I'll turn it over to you, and then you can teach us all that we really need to know or think we need to know about heat stress.
Great. Well, thanks again, Andy. I'm gonna I'll give you credit, but I'm gonna have to steal that line there about the air conditioner being probably a smarter thing to put in the coop than the heater, because I come from I'm in California, and in Davis it gets really, really hot. I never hear anyone say we spend a good chunk of our summers inside because of the heat, and during the wintertime is when all the heaters start coming out for their chickens. But I've never seen anyone say, you know what, maybe I should get an air conditioner for my chickens.
I know.
I'm gonna steal that. I think that's a great idea. If you were gonna do one or the other, the air conditioner would definitely be the one. And I actually get way more stressed with birds that we raise on campus with the heat than I do with the cold. Because it really can be dangerous. The only thing I would add to that is that everyone focuses so much on heat. The other thing that people should really be thinking about is humidity, and we'll talk about that in a little. But I think we focus so much on the heat issue, and when you look at the physiology of the birds and how they cool themselves, humidity is a really important thing to understand, too, and should be kind of integrated into your kind of decision-making process of what you're going to be doing. So just to go over like a little basic kind of physiology. So mammals, which is what we are obviously, and birds are warm-blooded. And I know we all know this, but just to start at like just a really basic level, that means they all make their own body heat. So when it's cold outside, they warm themselves up. When it's hot outside, they still stay the same temperature, hopefully. And it can be dangerous, obviously, if it's too hot or too cold. But it's really important to realize that, birds, just like us, we maintain a body temperature, and it takes a lot of energy to do that. So if we can keep the birds at kind of an ideal temperature, and for adult layer birds, we're typically talking about, temperature range of about 68 to 75 degrees Fahrenheit. So if we can keep our house as close to that temperature, the better it is for the birds, the more productive they'll be, the healthier they'll be, the better their behavior will be, the less likely they are to get sick. The same goes for humidity, so the amount of moisture in the air. We want to keep the humidity in the 50 to 70% range. And just like a lot of us, and maybe not all of us, have thermometers in our coops, we also need a hygrometer, something that will measure the humidity. It's really important to think about. And I would suggest, depending on what kind of coop you have, you probably might want even more than one thermometer. The idea that you have a continuous the same temperature in your entire coop is probably unrealistic. You want to put the thermometer in an area where the that represents the temperature that the birds are exposed to. Humidity is a little more homogeneous, so it's the same in the house for the most part, and the same in the coop. But the temperature, especially, I see a lot of people put thermometers in a spot that is really easy to visualize, so they don't have to bend down, for example, or they stick it in a corner somewhere behind something where you're not getting like the normal airflow, and that's giving you kind of a false reading, potentially too high during the summer, especially. So make sure you put your thermometer and potentially multiple thermometers, depending on how many birds you have, at an area that really represents what the birds are going through. And the hygrometer, which we'll talk about in a little, which measures humidity, they're not too expensive. In commercial poultry, there's a lot of other gases they can measure, but the basics that you really want to be able to measure is temperature. And then in addition to that, it's really important to consider humidity. So as I mentioned, a chicken's normal body temperature is between 104 and 107 degrees Fahrenheit, but we want the conditions in the house to be between that 68 and 75. As the temperature gets too low, there's an efficiency issue. So for every degree Celsius you go down, the birds are going to need much more feed in order for those birds to maintain their body temperature. More feed then means they're not being as productive. The feed conversion ratio will go up, for example, so the amount of feed to get eggs or meat is not going to be as efficient. And also, I think from just a backyard poultry perspective, it's really important to realize when you're out of those temperature ranges, it's not the end of the world. It just means that those birds are going to be less efficient, but from the backyard poultry perspective, you have more potential for welfare and disease issues. And as we've talked about a lot of times, you know, we really want to mitigate diseases before they hit. So birds, for example, there's all kinds of E. coli that are probably floating around in them, some salmonellas, some campylobacters. Those are relatively ubiquitous in poultry. And what I would say is that the bird's normal immune system can kind of cover those up so the birds are not showing any clinical signs of disease. Once you start stressing them out, that's when you start running into problems with disease. So you might have a 15, 20-week-old bird or a 30-week-old bird, and nothing changes at all. And then all of a sudden, some birds die. You take them to the diagnostic lab, and the diagnostic lab says, well, you know, they had E. coli, which could be a colibacillosis infection. And you're like, well, what did they die from? Well, it could be related because they were stressed. The stress suppresses their immune system, and then that E. coli proliferates in a way that didn't happen before. So going back to the poultry and their kind of physiology, so chickens don't sweat, so they don't have sweat glands. Mm-hmm. They depend on panting to cool themselves. So the panting encourages evaporation of air to cool themselves. And it's really important to realize if you have increased humidity, it is much more difficult to evaporate liquid water. So it's really important when we talk about this humidity, this hygrometer measurement that you want to be able to measure, that you have that humidity between 50 and 70%. If the humidity is too low, if you get below 50%, it gets really, really dry in a house, you have the potential to create a really dusty conditions. And that can be bad not only for your lungs, but your chicken's lungs also. So that's not ideal. And as the humidity gets too high in a house, again, it becomes really challenging for a bird to cool themselves using the panting physiological approach that they'll typically use. And it also creates problems where typically if you have high humidity in a house, that also means you have high CO2 in the house, and that also means you have high ammonia in the house. Now, a lot of people that have backyard chickens have pretty good ventilation because they basically have a fence. But some people don't. Some people have coops that are totally enclosed, and there's no right or wrong answer on which one is right. But if you do have environmental conditions which lend themselves to high temperatures and, let's say, high humidity, you run into the issue of then, if you have high humidity, of also having high ammonia, and high ammonia is bad for our lungs. It's bad for the birds. The birds can actually get corneal ulcers and go blind from high ammonia levels. And it can also cause excessive moisture in the litter. And if there's one thing that we really need to be conscious of, it's that the litter that the birds are being raised on, that substrate material, has a lot of different bacteria and protozoa, like coccidia, for example, in there. As you increase the moisture, you change the environmental conditions there, and that can cause proliferation of all kinds of unwanted bacteria and protozoa. So you want some bacteria in there. It's actually really good. It challenges their immune system, but you just don't want a huge load of them. And that perfect example of that's coccidia. Having low levels of coccidia in poultry litter is actually a pretty good thing. It just challenges their immune system. But if you create conditions where those coccidia can really persist for a long time and really build up, that's when you start running into a lot of problems, especially in younger birds. So the temperature in a house, again, is not uniform, so I really stress to people to have more than one thermometer if they think it's appropriate. If we're talking about one little room that's 10 by 10 or 5 by 5, it's probably a better example, then that single thermometer is probably fine, but it's really important to put that thermometer at a much more representative height and to put it in an area where it's not behind something. I always see people, for whatever reason, they kind of try to hide the thermometer, or they put the thermometer in kind of almost like a display case that's relatively high, and obviously hot air rises, so your thermometer is not always really reflecting the temperature of the birds. Also, I would spend a little extra money and get a minimum maximum thermometer, so that the thermometers that basically tell you within a 24-hour period or one-week period, depending on the thermometer and how you set it, what the minimum and maximum temperature is every 24 hours. That's really important to follow. And, I'm really, as a veterinarian, I'm also an epidemiologist, and it's really important to start capturing data. So when people, call me and they say, well, we're having egg production issues or we're having these disease issues, when you start kind of asking them questions related, okay, what's your normal egg production, and now where are you? They don't always have an answer. They just have a gut feeling, and their gut feeling is probably accurate, but it's really hard to address the problem if we really don't have some numbers behind that. So same thing with temperature. This time of year, when people call me with problems, I'll start, querying them about temperature and humidity, and typically people just don't have that information. They have kind of a gut feeling for where things are, but capturing that information is a really important thing to do, and having that minimum maximum thermometer value is really useful to kind of capture, in addition to the hygrometer measurements. And again, hygrometers are the ones, those are the widgets that measure our humidity, which we want between 50% and 70%, and we want to be able to capture that type of data because, again, it's so important not only for our birds' health, but to try to address, what the root problems of their diseases might be. So whenever I get, a phone call from someone saying, well, we sent our birds died, we sent it into the diagnostic lab, and this was the problem, then we can really start, we need to really start thinking about how do we prevent this in the rest of the flock. And understanding those environmental conditions is really, really essential. So a couple things before we talk a little more about temperature. I really wanted to go over some of the clinical signs that people can see when their birds are heat stressed. It has been an extremely hot summer in Davis and in California. And we've had challenges with our birds, how to keep them cool. And it's taken some experimentation, really, for us to figure out in the barn that we're using how to get the best ventilation, how to reduce the humidity, because these misters that a lot of people like, including myself, can actually be very dangerous if you do not use them correctly. So in short, and we'll go over this a little later, if you have high humidity, you do not want to turn on a mister, because the mister is going to increase the humidity as that water evaporates. And again, if you have high humidity, you have the issues with the ammonia potentially and the litter quality, but the birds, when they pant in high humid conditions, aren't able to cool themselves effectively. So it's really important to not only measure the humidity, but when you turn a mister on or any type of evaporative cooling device, which is basically just using the heat from the air to vaporize water, which will result in decreased temperature, which is good, but also increased humidity, it's really important to make sure that we're not exacerbating the problem. I've seen it with commercial producers, and I'm sure it happens with backyard producers, probably not as often in backyard producers because they use kind of chain link fences and things like that. But if you've got that nice coop that's got wood or it's enclosed, you run this risk of if you do turn on your cooling devices, your evaporative cooling devices, your misters in a high humid condition, that's when you can really push these birds over the edge and have a high mortality event. Because they can't, remember, they don't have sweat glands, so they can't cool themselves that way. The only way they can cool themselves is by panting. And if they're not able to cool themselves in effectively by panting in a high humid environment, then that's it. They can't. There's no other option. So when we think about, you know, what are the things that we see when birds are uncomfortable and hot, and I'm sure a lot of us have already kind of seen these, but the birds will be lethargic, just like you and I, when it's over 100 degrees, for example. They'll have actually increased cannibalism. So that's something to watch out for. There's all kinds of reasons birds can be cannibalistic. It could be a nutritional deficiency, it could be a density issue, but it can also be a temperature-related issue. You'll see their wings are spreading, and that's their way of trying to kind of cool themselves as their wings spread. You'll see them; their respiration rate will be increased, so you'll see respiratory rates that are so rapid that it's really difficult to actually measure them. But if you look at the literature, they talk about respiratory rates above 250 per minute as kind of signs that that the evaporative cooling is not working effectively, and they're really stressed based upon what they're being challenged with. Overall, they'll start becoming lighter in body weight. You'll have lower uniformity. So uniformity is just a fancy word for saying, are the birds all roughly the same size? Now, in backyard flocks, where most of, if not all backyard flocks, have birds of different ages, uniformity is a hard thing to kind of measure or visualize. But those birds will show they won't eat as much, and birds that don't eat as much won't produce eggs. They also won't drink as much. So sometimes when they get so lethargic, if there's not cool water near them, if the water is also kind of that humid, warm water that's got litter in it, like what happens, I mean, every single day we clean waters out and they still get dirty. The birds are really then in a dangerous situation. And you'll also see, as you can imagine, if they're not eating and drinking as much, birds that don't drink won't eat. Birds that won't eat won't produce the same quality and size of eggs. So as you start capturing that data, you might notice, hey, we're getting, 5-10% lower egg production than we used to. And if you're really kind of nerdy and you start measuring the size of the eggs, you would start noticing that the size of the eggs are smaller. And if you're super nerdy and you start looking at some of the egg quality characteristics, like cracks and checks and things like that, those will also contribute. Those will also be increased in this situation. And, if you get even beyond that and you start looking at how units and the quality of the egg proteins, there is an issue there. You'll start also seeing wet droppings in their feces, so paying attention to that is really important. Increased mortality, obviously. We're dealing with relatively smaller flocks here that most backyarders have, but you can get mortality from heat. And I don't know a lot about this, but there are some breeds of chickens which are more heat tolerant than others. And I think that's a really interesting area of research that some people are looking at, especially a lot of the village poultry in Africa that some researchers are looking at. Some of these village poultry have interesting, like the Fayumi that we've mentioned here a little before, have interesting characteristics when it comes to disease resistance to coccidiosis, for example. But they also have some interesting characteristics with respect to heat tolerance. Which could become very important as we move forward as environmental conditions change. We also have birds, as we've mentioned, their immunity is not as effective when they're hot. Their appetite's depressed. Their fertility is lower. So you can imagine all these kind of signs that you may or may not see, depending on what type of flocks you have. So if you're, speaking of fertility, if, for example, you have a breeder flock, those breeder flocks will have less, the quality of their semen will be less. You'll have more female infertility. Even when they do eat, and this goes to your point about mineral supplements and vitamin supplements, for example, Even when they do eat, their absorption of those minerals is reduced also. So there's a lot of challenges that you go through. And I think, you know, the big question is, okay, I can't change the temperature outside. Most of us obviously can't air condition our coops, which I thought was a very clever comment by you, obviously. But we can mitigate, you know, the environmental conditions. And now that we kind of sort of know what some of the clinical signs are and the measurements that we should be taking as far as humidity and measuring humidity daily and measuring temperature daily and understanding minimum and maximums and things like that, you know, the question is, okay, what can we do? So water. So this is, you know, the real simple basic stuff, and I know we all like to talk about more of the fancy things, but having cool, clean water at all times is so important. And making sure there's enough available space for all the birds to drink water at the same time is also really important. So normally you want to have about 6 inches. You know, we talk about this with feeders. You never want when you design your coop, you always want to think, okay, I want to make sure that every bird has the opportunity to eat at the same time if they all decide to eat. Because if they don't, then we're going to have some pecking order issues, maybe some cannibalism issues, some uniformity issues. So the reality is we need to do the same thing with water, especially on high temperature days. So you can put ice in the water to cool it off. So when we have really hot temperatures, for example, especially when that temperatures really get high around 5 o'clock in California, when it really kind of peaks, we'll put ice in our drinkers, in the bell drinkers, inside kind of the main canister of water, and that just cools the water down just enough. You don't want freezing water because that obviously wouldn't be comfortable either, but you want cool, clean water. That's really, really important. Mm-hmm. So the other thing is, you know, just like you and I, birds don't typically eat when it's really, really hot. So I advocate, you know, giving birds feed continuously, but if people do not feed them continuously, make sure that you're offering them food at the coolest part of the day. So if you do give them scraps, which I don't advocate, but if you do give them scraps for a minimal part of their nutrition, and you want them to actually eat those scraps, or if you're just feeding them for whatever reason non-continuously, make sure they have access to food when it's cool. No one wants to eat when it's over 100 degrees outside, obviously, or we don't want to eat as much. And as you alluded to very well, I thought it was a very good point to make. These birds are not going to eat as much. If they're not going to eat as much, they're probably not getting the 115 to 120 grams of feed they need that's calculated that they're supposed to get in order for them to produce an egg. So then you can start running into a lot of physiological problems. The birds, the way that their metabolism works is all the calcium is really sent to the egg, and whatever is left is used for whatever the body needs calcium for, including keeping bones nice and strong. So if they're getting less feed, the shells would be the last thing that you would notice as far as calcium deficiencies. The first thing you would start noticing is potentially broken bones and things like that because their bones are not developing correctly or they're just not laying enough calcium in those bones to keep those bones strong. And backyard birds, free-range and pastured birds are in a slightly, for lack of a better phrase, harsher condition because they're out and about and walking around and running around and flying as opposed to caged birds, where if you had some calcium deficiencies, it wouldn't be potentially as bad because those birds are in a much more controlled environment. The other thing is it's really important to keep chickens in a well-ventilated area with adequate airflow. So when we deal with chicks, I always tell people never put fans directly on birds because they can get really stressed in that environment. As the birds get older, they become a little more tolerant to that type of situation. That being said, you know, having fans and coops is really important, and you don't even have to direct the airflow on the bird. You want to move the stale air above the birds out. So if you have some kind of coop situation, you want to create have a coop that has adequate ventilation. So in the commercial poultry industry, we have curtain-sided windows, and it's kind of what it actually means. It's basically you've got, let's say if you have a 10-foot height on a house, let's say the first foot or so is just wood, and then the remaining 9 feet are some type of chicken wire, and then you have a tarp on the outside, and those tarps in really high temperatures can go up to allow airflow to transverse the house. So it's really important in your backyard coop to have air ventilation. So you don't want everything kind of closed off. You want to make sure that there is airflow, and not just you're not just blowing air inside that little coop, that you're blowing air and that's moving, hopefully, in some kind of laminar flow, in some kind of continuous flow. So you're pushing the hot air out, because hot air obviously rises, and if you're just kind of blowing it within that the rafters, it's not really as effective as if you have somewhere where that hot air is going in kind of a laminar flow. Other things to think about, so that airflow is really important, but if you have young birds, I would highly recommend not blowing the air directly on the birds, but just right above the birds. In high temperature situations, you can have a little more airflow on the birds, especially as those birds get a little older, and fans are really good for that. So a couple other recommendations. You should consider some type of evaporative cooling. So I didn't mean to scare anyone earlier when I talked about misters and evaporative cooling devices. Those can actually be really useful, but what I would suggest is in general, as the temperature rises, so you know, if you think about a 100-degree day in California, we have very, very low humidity at that point. But even in California, in the morning, we do have more humidity in the morning. It's cooler. Cool air in the morning doesn't hold as much water, so now we have a lot of water that's in the environment, liquid water. So the humidity is increased at that point. So if you are going to use misters and things like that, make sure that you're understanding what the humidity is in your house. And if you have good airflow, that's a great way to kind of help reduce the humidity inside a house, because the humidity inside a house can actually be much different than the environment outside if you don't have good airflow. So use those misters. Misters are a great way to cool birds down, but only do it when the humidity is low. If you do it when it's high, then the birds cannot adequately cool themselves, and you run into a while you might be cooling down the temperature, the humidity is so high that the birds, unless the birds can't cool themselves adequately. Also, avoid overcrowding chickens. So I think for most backyard producers, that's not really an issue. But sometimes people have more birds than they have space for those birds. So you at least want, for backyard birds, at least want 2 square feet per bird. And in high temperature environments, sometimes it's worth it to have, to push that to 3 or 4 square feet per bird. A lot of it just depends on the coop that you have, how it's ventilated, how it's insulated, what the humidity is. But one thing to consider is as the temperature increases, that type of overcrowding, that the threshold for overcrowding changes, and a lot of it depends on what kind of coop you have and the environmental conditions outside. So I guess my point is, you shouldn't be locked in to say, oh, these are 2 square feet per bird. You know, I'm doing exactly what Dr. Testa told me. The reality is, like everything, it becomes a little more complicated. So if you're noticing all the signs of heat stress in your poultry, you know, there's panting and wing spreading, and they're lethargic, and you're getting increased cannibalism, all these signs that we just talked about, and when you're saying, well, my birds are 2 square feet per bird, you know, aside from the cool water issues and the ventilation issues, you know, one thing you would want to consider is, well, okay, maybe I need some more space for these birds in this type of condition, in these type of extreme heat conditions. Other things to think about are, you know, I'm not a huge fan of removing litter because usually birds are pretty good at managing the litter if you have enough of it there. If the birds are at the proper density, they can kind of rototill it and compost it themselves. So one thing to be aware of, if they are heat stressed and you're getting some of these, you're getting more wet feces, for example, the humidity is high, Removing feces can help avoid some of the decomposition and the composting that's going on of all the microbes that are in the fecal material and in the litter. And that composting process produces a lot of heat. If you did remove some litter from the house and lay down some fresh litter in really high heat temperature, in really high heat situations, I would not be opposed to that. Under normal circumstances, I really like using the same litter and keeping that litter there. The idea of removing litter and putting down new litter during a flock's lifetime, I don't like as much because now you run the risk of introducing new microbes. You've kind of created a vacuum where that litter is now relatively sterile. So now let's say there was an E. coli infection or something, or some rodent came in and started shedding salmonella. Now that salmonella has got a lot more room to proliferate as opposed to litter material, which has a lot of bacteria in it, but they're relatively symbiotic or innate as far as they're not causing any disease issues. So in general, I don't like to remove litter and lay down new litter, but when it's a high temperature situation, that's another thing to consider. And then just a couple other things. The ventilation thing we talked about, it's really important to consider, that you want pretty much half of your structure to allow airflow at the minimum. So don't build your coop, with walls all the way around it unless they're really well insulated, and that obviously takes some time and money. Alternatively, you can just have a lot of wire fencing, which is what most people do. But some people, I know they like to build these beautiful Norman Rockwell-esque kind of coops, and it's important to consider the practical aspect of that, especially depending on your climate. And then the other thing that I was reading about that I hadn't really considered is, outside your chicken house, the grass that's around there and the weeds that are around there, you don't want things that go too high, because if they go too high, then you're not getting any airflow as those birds are moving around during the day. You don't want them to be too low, because if they're too low, they have the potential to kind of reflect heat back on the bird. So I'd say a low, couple inches of grass is really important to have there. Again, you don't also want it to be too high because you don't want to encourage any kind of predatory habitat or any other kind of wildlife habitat. Mice and rodents and rats, for example, rats, their nesting locations can be up to 100 feet from where they are, from where they're kind of their normal exploratory ranges. Mice are about 30 feet. So it's really important, when you measure the distance of your coop to arborage, for example, that you make sure that things are relatively well kept within that 100-foot barrier. Obviously, in an urban environment, that's really hard because you're a lot of times in your neighbor's yard by that time, and you can't obviously deal with any of their problems, but you do the best you can with the situation that you have.
Cool.
Yeah. Any questions or?
Not right now. No. This was great because I'm going to go commercial break here for a second, and then we can continue. But this has been wonderful because it's just, it's direct. It's concise, and it's awesome. Great for taking notes, just jotting all this down, and all the things that we can do and things to look out for. The humidity and the misting, I thought was fabulous because, again, you'll see a lot of that. We just use a mist system, but they don't take in consideration of anything regarding the humidity and how that might be. But yeah, you talked about that in detail, which was fabulous because that's something I don't think we've ever mentioned or had anybody mention on the show before. So that was awesome information for those that maybe use that or new keepers who are thinking about using the misting systems maybe out in the run or in the coop. I like the fact that you said air directly on the birds in most cases is not, good for them, healthy for them. I've shared that for years. Air movement, air exchange, but just to have a fan at the end of the roost just blowing on them all night long, even in the summer, is just not conducive to a healthy flock. I agree with that, and I'm glad I've been sharing the right information, and you shared it again today. So, Doc, I'm going to go to a quick commercial break, and then we return. We can continue. Today, folks, if you're just tuning in or tuned in recently, we're talking with Dr. Pateski, and he's teaching us all about heat stress and chickens, things we can do to try to prevent this, keep our chickens comfortable. Notice I didn't say keep them cool, but keep them comfortable during the summertime. Different tricks of the trade and other things we can do and things we might have seen that we can do but maybe shouldn't or do it a different way. So always glad to have the experts on the show, and we'll be right back with more from Dr. Pateski here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
Since 1921, Stromberg's has been a family-owned and operated business providing quality poultry and poultry supplies to their customers. Today, the Stromberg's family offers over 200 different breeds of poultry, including chickens, waterfowl, and game birds. They also offer poultry supplies for both the beginner and experienced poultry keeper. Stromberg should be on the top of your list when it's time to order your new day-old baby chicks and poultry supplies. Order online today at StrombergsChickens.com. That's StrombergsChickens.com. Do you provide a heat source for your backyard chickens in the winter? In most cases, it's not necessary. But if you choose to provide a heat source for your backyard chickens, it's imperative to use a safe and effective heat source, and the only one I recommend is the Sweeter Heater. The Sweeter Heater is a safe, completely sealed, washable, non-breakable, energy-efficient, long-lasting, and reliable specific area heater that comes with a 3-year warranty. Ditch the dangerous heat lamp this season and invest in the only heater I recommend, the Sweeter Heater. Purchase the Sweeter Heater online at SweeterHeater.com. That's SweeterHeater.com. When you need an incubator, think Brinci, the incubation specialists. Brinci has been a world-leading manufacturer of quality incubators for almost 40 years. They manufacture incubators that hold anywhere from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity controls and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and receive 10% off your entire order. Order your new incubator today at Brinci.com. That's Brinsea.com. Cackle Hatchery is a third-generation, family-owned and operated hatchery. They offer over 193 varieties of poultry shipped directly from their facility in Missouri. It's their mission to enhance your life by providing you with quality poultry for showing, meat, enjoyment, eggs, and pets. They specialize in hatching purebred poultry and shipping day-old chicks right to your local post office since 1936. 4-H and FFA Youth Poultry Clubs get a 10% discount. Check out their website, cacklehatchery.com, for posted weekly specials and discounts. That's cacklehatchery.com.
Come back. Come back, back. Come back. Come back. Come back, 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 back. Come back, 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 back.
From our family to yours, feed your chickens the way nature intended. Pure, wholesome goodness. Kalmbach Feeds. Visit our website at kalmbachfeeds.com. That's KalmbachFeeds.com. Or order today on Amazon.com. Kalmbach Feeds is a proud sponsor of the Chicken Whisperer.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by our good friends over at Kalmbach Feeds. Also want to tell you about, and we are talking about coops and coop care in the summertime and things like that, but want to talk to you about a product called Sweet PDZ Coop Refresher. And I've told you many a times on the show that we use it. We've used it for, the first time we used this product was probably in 2000, 2009, maybe 2010, and the results were astonishing. In fact, you've heard me say before that it just was one of those things where my wife came in unannounced and said, "Oh my gosh, this is," you know, she went out to clean one of the coops we had and where we were using the product, just, you know, to get a comparison. I want to make sure, you know, that we were having a good comparison there. And she came back in. I was working in the office, and I won't forget, she came in, "That stuff really works." We had a coop that was about 3x4. We kept some Ceramas and Silkies in there, not many. It was two levels, a very unique coop. It was actually a chicken tractor. And she was using really a coffee cup, even a smaller than a regular, like, ceramic cup, a small styrofoam coffee cup like you would get at the break room, if you will, and just sprinkling that in the bedding. And by the time she went back to clean the coop on our regular schedule, she was astounded by the difference in the times before, the many times before, when she goes out to clean that. So without a doubt, we know firsthand it really works. It's all natural. When you're done, you can add it to the compost bin or your garden with, say, the bedding if you want to, especially in the compost bin. It's derived from the earth anyway. But it's really an awesome product. We've used it. We've had, you know, again, firsthand experience years and years and years ago. Now, you may know it as the Sweet PDZ Horse Stall Refresher, especially if you have horses. You may be familiar with their product and already use it for your horse stalls. Repackaged, a smaller bag for and designed for the backyard flock keeper. And so check it out next time you're in the store. If you don't see it in the store, ask for it. Sweet PDZ Coop Refresher, and you can visit their website as well to do that. Hey, we use it. It's awesome, and we saw firsthand. It was the story. I love it because it was so unplanned. The wife was literally unprovoked, comes in and says, "This stuff really works. This is crazy." And so it works really good. So I encourage you to check them out. Alrighty, back to our show. We've got Dr. Pateski, and he's teaching and talking all about heat stress in chickens. And already you've probably written down a boatload of information. I did post over on our Facebook page, no takers yet. I don't know if they're a little shy or think they're going to get picked on or think it's a trap. I'm not sure. But I did, at the beginning of the show, put up a poll on the Chicken Whisperer Facebook page. I put, for those of you that choose to heat your chicken coops in the winter, do you also add an air conditioner in your coop in the summer? If not, why? And then I put on there, I said, we're talking about this live on the radio show right now, and your input may be shared on air. Thank you for your participation. And so far, nobody's brave enough to respond to that. Not going to pick on you. We just want to know if you do choose in your mind choose to put a heater in your coop, how you justify that in the winter, but why you may justify not or haven't thought about putting an air conditioner in the coop for the summer. So I'll leave it up for a little bit longer after the show to see if we get any takers on that, any brave souls out there that want to answer. I'm not going to pick on you. We're just going to use it for today's show. So we'll go back and bring back on our friend Dr. Pateski, and I will let you continue educating us about heat stress.
Great. Thanks, Andy.
Sure.
So just a few more things. I think we covered a lot in the last segment, but just as a reminder, so if you're going to remember just a few numbers, remember that 68 to 75 Fahrenheit, that's what we're shooting for. As far as our temperature, and then with respect to humidity, we're shooting again for 50 to 70%. And then I think the only thing we need to be cautious of, and I see a lot of people using misters, and that's totally fine, is just in general, only use the misters when it's hot and dry, not when it's hot and wet. So if you don't have a hygrometer, if you don't want to measure humidity, you can kind of feel when it's humid. Obviously, in the southeast of the U.S. at this time of year, it's very humid. So,
oh yeah.
So it's in those conditions, probably not ideal to use misters or some type of evaporative cooling device. And that's where fans are really going to kind of step in. And remember, when you have high humidity, especially in a house where you're trapping the air, you run the risk of having high carbon dioxide and high ammonia. So in general, there's always exceptions. But in general, when you have high humidity, you also have high CO2 in a house, and you also have high ammonia in a house. So those are kind of a dangerous combination of things to consider. Now, when you do use misters, it's really important that you can get your litter really, really wet in that environment, and that can cause also kind of a more heat to be generated. It can cause unideal conditions with respect to ammonia generation too. So you need to be really careful with how long you leave those misters on, the droplet size of the misters, because if you're just creating lots of water and it's, those droplets are heavy or large and they're just falling on the ground, you're not really accomplishing what you're trying to accomplish, which is cooling the birds. The other thing to realize is that, you know, that evaporative cooling, you're trying to cool the air. Sometimes birds will actually go in there and get cooled off. A lot of times they will not. So if your goal is to actually, in extreme heat conditions, especially with backyard birds, you can take the birds and you can actually give them a bath. And you can kind of set up, you know, an old litter box or something like that and put some cool water in there, not freezing water in there. Sometimes you can allow the birds to do it themselves. But the in a high, you know, kind of in an environment where you're really a little worried about those birds, they're panning really heavily. They don't look too healthy. You're seeing a lot of the wings, a lot of the clinical signs we talked about earlier. You can take the birds and you can gently place them in a cool water bath, and that's actually pretty effective. There's a decent amount of literature that looks at the concept of wetting birds and using that as a method of evaporative cooling and environmental cooling in broilers and layers, and that seems to be pretty effective at decreasing body temperature. The reason it's not used in the commercial world is that it would just be, first of all, in the commercial world, there's pretty good ventilation systems using evaporative cooling, laminar airflow. Those type of things are pretty well controlled. That kind of environment is a really important part of poultry husbandry. In backyard birds, because that's not such a focus and there's so few birds, you can pick up the birds and put them in kind of a cool water bath if the misters, for example, aren't working. Or let's say you have a high humid environment and you don't want to turn misters on. That's when cooling the birds off in kind of a water bath, placing them individually in there or letting them explore that option to see if it's something they like, is something to really consider. And could be, I think, ideal, especially in those high humid environments, if you just put the bird, get them cool, or get their surface wetted like that instead of using the evaporative cooling of the air, which, again, in a high humid environment, it's not going to be ideal. So that's something to really consider. It doesn't get used in the commercial world because it would just be so labor-intensive. The thing you want to be really, really cautious about, though, is some birds are going to be a little more amenable to being touched than other birds, and I think, you know, all the people that are listening understand that risk, that some birds are pretty comfortable around us, but if we have little kids that are running around and those kids are running and trying to grab the birds, you know, you run the risk of piling where the birds are all in one corner and they can really cause some injuries and even mortality, especially in a high humid, high heat environment. So you want to be really careful when you do that, but I would consider it as a way to address heat. And we've used it on our poultry at UC Davis in high heat environments, and it's worked actually pretty well. Seems to be relatively effective, especially when the misters are the droplet size on the mister can't be optimized, or you have that high humid environment. So I think that's something that's really important to consider. Along with all the other things we talked about. You know, the lowest hanging fruit is really going to be the ventilation, and the other lowest hanging fruit is going to be cool water, cleaning those waters out even more religiously in that kind of environment, especially because warm water, you know, bacteria typically like growing under warmer conditions. So if you have some litter that's in the water, that's in your bell drink or whatever it be, and the conditions the water's warmer and warmer and warmer, you're going to get more proliferation of bacteria. So during the wintertime, when you might clean the waters out maybe once a week, once every other week, whatever it be, in the summertime, you might have to make an increased effort to keep those waters not only cool but also clean. So those are important things to think about also. Mm-hmm. I don't have too much clean. Else. Yeah, I don't have too much else other than that. Is there anything that I feel that you feel like I'm not I haven't covered adequately, or?
I don't think so. You're the doc, not me, and we get all this great information with you coming on the show. So I think you've covered everything. I think you opened some eyes and made us, which I love when you and other scientists come on. It's like you may kind of make us go, never really thought about that. And of course, I try to take this information and share it with others as much as possible when I'm on tour, on the Facebook, or even in the magazine and things like that. So I think you did a fabulous job and made it easy for us to understand, easy to take notes on, and gave us ideas to easy things to implement, choose to implement in our coops and in our backyard. So I think you did a fabulous job. It was a great show. And I appreciate you coming on as always. And if you didn't know, Dr. Pateski comes on the second, I believe, Tuesday of every single – it's Thursday, second Thursday of every single month. And you can go back and listen to all of his shows. They're all archived and all the topics that he shares. He's also a contributor to Chicken Whisperer magazine, the fall issue. We're going to be starting to work on that this week, actually, and try to get that rolled out in September for everybody. So, Dr. Pateski, thank you very much for joining us today, as always. And wonderful show, great information. We thank you for sharing it with us and our listeners.
Great. Thanks again, Andy. It's good being a guest.
You too. Great. Thank you so much. And got to love it when Maurice is on. And last week we had Dr. McCrae on, and she comes on twice a month. We love when she's on as well. And we hope you'll continue to listen to all the great programming we have to offer. Again, kind of the Chicken Whisperer brand we like for that. When you think about it, science-based, fact-based, study-based information for you to raise a healthy flock of chickens in your backyard. So whether it's the book, and of course my first book that is out has been revised. It is out. Well, there's added information in that book. You can still buy it on Amazon, Lowe's, Home Depot, Tractor Supply, Barnes & Noble, and of course I said Amazon, the new and revised edition. And then of course in December, my second book will be coming out, which is largely written by scientists, nutritionists, and veterinarians about statements that are made on blogs and forums that just aren't quite what they're cracked up to be, if you will, fact or chicken poop. That should be coming out, we hope, in December. You can pre-order that, actually, on Amazon right now. Just look for Chicken Fact or Chicken Poop there on Amazon. You can pre-order that book. If the price comes down, you'll get it at the reduced price between now and Christmas. So that's something to actually think about. The first book was co-written by poultry scientist Dr. McCrae. And the second book has, of course, Dr. Pateski has contributed that, a bunch of who's who in the poultry industry regarding that book. The magazine, chickenwhispermagazine.com, we would like for you to go over there and subscribe to the digital edition and, of course, the print edition if you like to actually have a real magazine sent to your mailbox. We do that all the time. Thousands of people subscribe to the print edition as well. As the digital edition. And again, look at who's actually writing for the magazine. Science-based, fact-based, study-based information, not any of this. It'll work for me, it'll work for you, or herbs do this, herbs do that, herbs do this, and it's not backed with any studies or any factual information, or any of these homemade concoctions that they don't tell you what's in it or the amount that's in it, or any of that stuff, natural care and stuff like that. So, we want to make sure we get you the stuff that's been proven that you can count on to help keep a healthy flock of chickens. I've actually been put on a poultry advisory board with others, and we were talking about that actually today. We had a meeting about mites and the study that's going to be done at Auburn University with mite control, not necessarily prevention, and different products. And it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out over time. We'll share those results with you. But I'm glad to be on that advisory board because I told folks it would be interesting. And I don't think the first go-around we're doing herbs, but I said it would be interesting to see. And they're going to infect the chickens with a certain number of mites. They will be counting, actually, the mites. The additive will be in the nest boxes, and it'll be interesting to see. And I had mentioned on that advisory council today, about possibly herbs, and that if there's 9,000 mites on this bird, and at the end of the study there's 7,000 mites on the bird, then I can see some folks in the poultry backyard industry taking that and starting to say, oh, look, herbs are a good natural treatment for mites. And I made the comment today, you know, if I have a chronic disease, I don't want less of it. I want it to be gone. If I have chickens, I don't want them to have any mites, let alone go from 9,000 to 7,000. I don't find that successful. I wouldn't find that method useful. But I guarantee you somebody's going to say, hey, guess what? There are only 7,000 mites on the bird after I used herbs. And okay, if that makes you happy, and if you're happy with those results, go ahead. But not me. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that, and I'm glad to be on that advisory council. Thanks for tuning in today. It was a great show with, again, Dr. Pateski teaching us all about heat stress and chickens. And we'll return next Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio. God bless everybody.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.